Hello, I'm Muriel, and I love true crime.
I'm Nick, and I am not a fan.
Thank you for joining us. Each week, I force Nick to listen to me tell him a story of a true crime. Welcome to Muriel's Murders. Today, we're covering a subject that for some reason I knew absolutely nothing about. Y'all may have heard about it, right? Apparently it was a huge case in 2013. The Netflix documentary is extremely popular, but me, I missed it.
There we are, missing the train, baby.
And I kept seeing the documentary pop up on my Netflix channel thing, and I really wanted to watch it. And you know, because I do this podcast, I was thinking, I need to be watching things I can do a case on. Like, obviously, this thing is too popular. I'm not going to do it. But I just wanted to watch it anyway. You know what I mean? So this week, we bring you a story of the rise and fall of a charismatic surfer with a hatchet and the reality show producers who thought giving him a show would be a great idea.
Oh, I love this.
Here comes Kai, the hatchet-wielding hitchhiker.
All right. Oh, that's actually terrible. Hatchet-wielding surfer is kind of like, okay, hanging 10, fighting sharks. But if you're out here hitchhiking and hatcheting.
Well, you don't really know how this story is going to play out. So it is absolutely a roller coaster. I loved it. For this story, I used the Netflix doc, The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker, directed by Colette Camden. And then I just read a ton of reporting from the Fresno Bee.
Okay.
And that's it.
Beautiful.
Nick?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen and friends beyond the binary, doing this podcast is our favorite job, and you, our listeners, make it possible when you subscribe to our Patreon or through our Spotify feed. We want to thank the most recent Patreon supporters, Eric W. and Kristen H.
Woo!
Plus, we want to thank Ange for increasing her monthly pledge.
Hey!
Recent exclusive episodes include the Ange-requested mystery of Molly Zelko, and one that quickly became a classic between Muriel and I, the case of the Denver Spider-Man.
I love that episode.
There was so much poop involved. Plus, we make sure to hit our subscribers with one non-true crime episode each and every month. So if you're one of the people who regularly listen to this podcast and you can stomach another monthly subscription, please sign up and kick us a $5 bill every month in return for all these juicy, delicious, fine, sexy episodes of Muriel's Murders we pump into the digital atmosphere. And if you can't handle another monthly subscription all up in your bush, but you want to PayPal or Venmo us anyway, we're open vessels. We'll accept. You know what I mean? Kick us some dough. We love you.
Yeah.
Oh,
and any and all love, right?
Hell yeah. Fake love too. I hate it when rappers say no fake love. It's like I'll take some fake
give
love.
Give it to me. That stroke my ego.
Okay. Please stay tuned after the episode in the outro for an update on the other show I help produce, the Good Stuff Podcast.
All right. Dang, Nick, you sounded so much less unhinged than I did in my part. Okay. This is a true story involving murder, violence, drugs, adult themes, etc. So if any listeners are like Nick and they don't want to hear about those kind of things, go listen to a different podcast.
Plus, we're going to curse and we're going to joke about sensitive topics matters. So if you don't like that, I'm unhinged. Anyways, you know, these are all good reasons to listen to something besides us.
Yeah. Also, not my fault. Lots of F-bombs in this one.
No,
they're all quotes. It's
no,
the hatchet-wielding hitchhiker.
Muriel's always saying that. You guys know. There's like, she says that, and then there's like two. For some reason, she got extra sensitive about it. You
I
guys
just
are
want
fine.
Everybody to be able to listen with their children around a campfire.
Yeah, just bring out the Bluetooth while you're roasting some marshmallows. Have
right.
your AI generated. You know, whatever. Okay.
All right, Nikki, are you ready to hear this story?
No.
Okay. Let's get started. On February 1st, 2013, a bizarre scene unfolded in Fresno, California. Around 2 p.m., a car rammed into a group of Pacific Gas and Electric workers, sending one man flying and pinning another against the back of the company truck. From the car emerged a massive man, 6'4", around 300 pounds, shouting racist slurs and claiming to be Jesus Christ.
Oh, this is like every nightmare combined into one just freaking chaotic moment.
Just wait. It's just like a AI generated human hands. Okay. There's just so much more disturbing things to come.
So many digits, most of which are intertwined. Okay.
Rayshon Neely was stuck, sitting on the hood, his leg pinned under the car.
Horrible.
When the giant man walked up to him, talking about Jesus, Rayshon did what I think I would do in this situation and just started screaming.
Good.
Four or five PG&E workers heard him. They ran to pull this guy, Jet Simmons McBride, away from Rayshon. But by now, McBride was on a rampage. A woman tried to put herself between Rayshon and McBride. The colossal man bent down, snatched up the woman in a bear hug, and wrestled her to the ground. At some point during all of this, a 24-year-old transient hitchhiker with a wild bush of curly hair jumped out of the passenger side of Jet McBride's car. And out of nowhere, the hitchhiker starts attacking Jet McBride in the back of the head with a hatchet, getting in several frenzied chops.
So he went from riding shotgun with his friend to hatcheting his skull apart.
Right. So we don't know who these people
are. Of course we don't.
This is all unfolding.
I'm just saying.
So this hatchet part of it was kind of too many things for the people on the scene.
It's just a lot of information.
So I'm unsure of what the hatchet guy was up to. The PG&E workers chased the hatchet guy off. They were like, get out of here. The hatchet guy then retreated to the other side of the road. By now, McBride was covered in blood. Mm. And making a beeline again for Rayshon Neely, who was still pinned down between the vehicles. The PG&E workers attacked McBride as a team, tackling him to the ground, pulling him off Rayshon, knocking him down again, and then finally managing to push him into the grassy shoulder of the road where McBride stood up and stripped down buck naked. So they tackle him again, and the workers held naked Jet McBride down on the grass until authorities came. And with the ambulances and police came a young sports anchor named Jessup Reisbeck.
What, just like covering the local Little League game? He's so, like, oh, I can't get in on any major league sports. I think I'm in Little League. They're like, fine, yeah, we got a hatchet case down the road. He's like, I'm going, fine, I'll take it.
So Jessup was a sports anchor for a local Fox News affiliate, KMPH News. And he had been roped into covering breaking news that day. There was nobody to cover stuff that happens. He's just sitting in his car being like, man, I just want to watch basketball. And then over the radio, they're like, there's some weird stuff going on in West Fresno, right? Okay. So he had never reported any news in his entire life. But he got this call over the radio about this wild-ass situation. Got in the car, drove over to see what was up.
So here we go. This is his time to shine. The coach has put you in the game. Yeah. This is the fourth quarter. You got 2 seconds on the clock, bro.
So he's like pumped, right? Uh-huh. And he gets to the scene and it's chaos. There are people everywhere. The accident happened right in front of this like roadside flea market set up where like half the people were watching everything go down and then the other half were just hanging around, digging around clothes racks under this tent thing. And so Jessup starts talking to people, right? Yeah. And getting a sense of what happened. And he realizes through talking with people, like they zoom in from far away. And they realize the hatchet guy is just lurking across the street, right? They're like, oh, that's the guy. Right.
Oh, no.
So Jessup waves the Hatchet guy over for an interview. And he's kind of a grimy, ratty version of Pauly Shore. He's got this long, wild, curly hair.
A ratty version of Pauly Shore?
Like, I think I'm being correct.
I just saying, a ratty version of Pauly Shore is like the rattiest person that's ever lived.
Well, we'll see. I'm gonna, you know, okay, we're gonna have some really fun Nick immersive. I like showing you videos because you get
okay,
so upset.
Good. Okay, so I'm picturing Master Splinter at this time.
Okay, well, he's 24, so he's very young. So he's like, has this bandana on. He's wearing a baggy red sweatshirt. He has a sleeping bundle and then two backpacks strapped to his back. And Jessup is all clean cut and sporty, and he's ready for this interview. So he's like, hey, man, you know, what's up? How did you get here, right?
Yeah. Where'd that hatchet come from?
And the guy just goes, well, went straight out of Dogtown, skateboarding, surfing it up. Right. So that's the beginning of his story. So
they're just high as hell. Right.
And then he looks straight in the camera, this guy, and he says, hey, before I say anything else, I want to say this. No matter what you've done, you deserve respect. Even if you make mistakes, you're lovable, and it doesn't matter your looks, skill, or age, or size, or anything. You're worthwhile. No one can ever take that away from you.
That's such good advice. He's like a Zen master.
Right, and then he launches into how he hatcheted this guy. Okay. So, Nick, I'm going to play this whole interview for you now.
Okay, good.
Those of us who were under a rock in 2013, I think you were one of us. I'm linking the video in the show notes so you can watch it too if you want to.
Okay.
But I'll talk through it too, so don't worry if those of us who are like, I'm not watching no YouTube video, or Muriel, I've literally seen that like 5,000 times. Yeah. All right, so we're going to pause it.
Okay.
And I'm going to show Nick this video.
Beautiful. That was one of the best YouTube videos I've ever seen in my life. It's up there with the Busy Bone. With the Busy Bone clip.
Yeah, my purple homies
with
got
his
a
purple homies.
Off.
That is that was really that. Hey, actually though, I don't, if you're driving, like pull over, pause, and click the link. It just it's almost 6 minutes long.
It's long.
It doesn't quit. Like, why? Of course movies aren't popular and like beautiful art sucks. You know, it's like, cause that exists. That was the most entertaining thing I've ever seen. That was really good. Wow.
I thought you'd like
it. I didn't like it. You're right. That is that obviously it's like mega, mega popular with millions of views and everything.
You've never seen it though, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I haven't seen it either.
It's amazing. So what's going to happen? Are you going to tell the people what that was? I don't know how to,
yeah.
I can't recap it. It's way too much.
I'm going to give a recap. We haven't seen it. Okay. So he's Kai. He's straight out of Dogtown. No last name. Sort of talks like a surfer who's also a native of Canada. He starts telling this story.
Oh, I thought he said West Virginia.
He did.
Oh,
did you
you're
see
right.
Him
accent.
Wink?
Yeah. And his accent's very weird.
It's very much he's Canadian doing like.
He's a little bit like, hey, bro, are you crazy? He like he's sound. Also from the street, kind of. My favorite part was when he said, like, have you ever attacked anyone before? And he starts talking about this other guy whose teeth he beat
up. I'm going to tell you about that.
He banged up his hand. It was like, look at the teeth mark, and his fingernails are just the dirtiest. It looks like he's been digging in mud for the last 9 months.
It's a lot, okay? It's a lot. So, okay. So... he starts telling this story. I'm going to translate the story, okay? So Kai said he's hitchhiking, riding around Fresno with this big guy. They were hanging out at the recycling center.
Yeah.
And the guy started crying and told him about how he had sexually assaulted this 14-year-old girl in the Virgin Islands at the time.
Yes.
And Kai said at that point, the guy hugged him. He was really freaked out. He didn't know what to think. He didn't know what to do. So, you know, they're still in the car. They leave the recycling center. And he says, the big guy said he was Jesus Christ. He could do anything he wanted. And he just crashed the car into a bunch of people. Yeah. So Kai took the keys out of the ignition because from riding rails and freight trains, he knew if someone gets pinned like that, you don't back up or they can bleed out. And then he was also worried. Right, that this guy was going to crash his car into more people. He's
right,
like, I saved all these people's lives.
I think it's important to say that this whole interview is done by this guy who's clearly never interviewed anyone before.
Yeah, right.
And also he's like, you're the hero.
Yeah.
Like, they're interviewing the guy that saved the day. They're framing this as the lady says you saved her life.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, I'm fucking Kai.
Yeah, I saved everyone's life. Yeah, who's here? I saved every, you know, like, he's very... It is, that's a really important point. He does very much frame this like you are a hero in a situation where you're kind of like, well, I don't know if you know all the, what's happening.
Yeah,
right
and
now.
Also, like, you're clearly, you know, just zonked out of reality.
Well, okay, we're going to keep going, right? Yeah. So he said when the big guy, he saw the big guy attacking a woman, he, quote, ran it behind him with a hatchet. And here he starts like this tomahawking motion.
Yeah.
And smash, smash, smash. Like that.
He was very pumped about hatcheting the guy in the back of the head.
Yeah. Big, big gestures.
Yeah.
And that would actually become Kai's famous catchphrase.
Sure.
In the future coming. Okay. When Jessup asked if he had ever experienced anything like that before, he said, quote, well, this one time I was at an orchard and this fucking guy starts beating on this woman who he calls his. So I walked on over and I started smashing him in the head. And he holds up his hands and he says, you see all these teeth marks right here for the camera? Yeah, I started smashing him in the head, in the teeth. Busted out all his teeth.
And just imagine the dirtiest hands and fingernails. Like, you could never see a detail.
Well, and I love Jessup just going like, yeah, man, sounds like you just really only care about doing the right thing. You have no regard for yourself.
You don't never even think about Kai, huh?
Yeah. So anyway, he ends the interview with, it was fucking gnarly, man. Holy shit. It was like the biggest wave I've ever ridden in my life. And then he made a plug asking the audience for donations of a free surfboard and wetsuit.
Yes. Yeah, he wants to ride Maverick.
Yeah. Okay. So that's about the interview. Did you have anything else you wanted to
add? Oh, there were so many good details. Well, one thing is the reporter, his name is Jessup. Okay. So Jessup asks him, would you do it again if you could? And he said, the only thing he would change is that as soon as he heard about this guy claiming to have raped this 14-year-old girl, he wished he had just hatcheted him to death right then.
Yeah, at the recycling center.
At the recycling center.
Yeah. And this is another thing. Just keep in mind. Hold this in your head.
Well, another important element I feel like is he's like, well, how are you even in the car? He was like, I was hitchhiking, man.
Yeah.
And he's like, they try to tell you not to hitchhike, but I did it, and I did something good from it.
Yeah, he's like, what would have happened if I wasn't there? Lucky I was there hitchhiking.
This is our big hero. Kai's our hero.
Thankfully, nobody died that day. Jet McBride was arrested and charged with attempted murder. He survived the hatchet attack.
Uh-huh.
Rayshon Neely, the victim pinned between the cars, ended up with a shattered leg, but he recovered.
Okay.
He also, just for the record, seemed like a really great guy.
Uh-huh.
He just was straight up like, God pulled me through.
Yeah.
And Jet McBride should be forgiven by everyone. You know, he didn't. It's fine. I'm letting it go.
Uh-huh.
I'm moving forward, and he should be forgiven.
Okay. Wow.
So after Kai did the interview with Jessup, he refused to do any more press with any of the reporters that were there. So Jessup was the only one who got the interview, right?
So you can't capture this lightning in a bottle, baby.
Keep that in your mind, too. So Jessup got Kai's email address, and then Kai just like took off into the sunset.
Also important to note, Jessup asked him, like, you know, do you just think about yourself? And the way he really answered was, I don't have any family. As far as everyone that I grew up with, they all think I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And like, that was pretty unprompted. Definitely not an answer to the question.
The YouTube does a hard cut there, too. That's just the end of the YouTube video.
Well, yeah. Okay, so.
Okay.
Jessup Rysbeck was pumped. His first news story was so freaking action-packed. But most importantly, he thought Kai was an absolute star boy. He had this megawatt personality, just like you were saying, right? So the story aired about a minute and a half of footage from this like 6-minute interview.
Yeah.
Jessup thought it was so good. He uploaded the entire interview onto his YouTube channel under the title Kai, hatchet wielding hitchhiker. Amazing interview with Jessup Risebeck.
Hey, he should do that. Good for him. You know, that feels like someone who loves sports.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you get your time to shine. You get up to the plate. You know, you swing for the fences.
I love it. So he did that and he went to bed and he woke up the next morning and the thing was totally viral. Now, I just miss all of this. I swear to God. Uh-huh. But there were memes, jokes on late night, auto-tune songs. Kai, at the time, was breaking the internet. You know, that thing that dads tell you to do if you're an actor, just go viral. Yeah. I did that.
Yeah. You should just be famous on YouTube. Have you thought of that yet?
I think my dad told me that for 5 years. Every year I lived in Chicago and I came home for Christmas, he was like, hey, have you tried being famous from YouTube?
Yeah, it's like, just go hitchhiking, bring a weapon, kill whoever gives you a ride. Hopefully they'll be doing something bad when it happens.
All right.
Everyone will think you're a hero.
So Kai was the hatchet man of the moment. But no one could find him. Jessup Risebeck was fielding hundreds of emails and phone calls trying to reach Kai. In particular, producers from the late night talk show with Jimmy Kimmel wanted him to do a guest appearance. And producers from Keeping Up with the Kardashians wanted to give him, wait for it, his own show.
That's like Ryan Seacrest.
The reality show brand manager was starting starting to manage other people.
Okay, so this person had like PA'd on the set of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
She was huge.
She was huge.
No,
okay.
No. The reality show brand manager was like, she created what we think of when we think Keeping Up like with the Kardashians.
Oh, okay.
Like making sure things are on brand.
Okay, okay.
Right. So Jessup was like, me first, bros, right? Jessup planned to pass on the messages, but he wasn't giving out Kai's information to anyone. And he was going to try for a second interview before passing on any messages. Mm-hmm. So Jessup sent Kai an email. Kai called him from a gas station in Stockton, California. The news station got Kai a hotel room in Stockton. And Jessup was like, just stay in Stockton. I'm coming to get you. So he drives up for interview number two, getting to know Kai, the truth behind the hero. So when they get to Stockton,
totally unstable hatchet man.
So when they get to Stockton, they're driving towards the hotel and see Kai is already out in the wild smoking and just like running down the street. They just see him and they're like, oh, there's Kai. So afraid they'll lose him, they just pull over and do the interview on the side of the road. Jessup is all pumped up, wearing a polo shirt, crisp. And, you know, he's like getting his interview chopped up, right?
Suddenly he's Barbara Walters.
So he starts like his whole thing with this line, you know, he's practiced about how Kai is like Batman, you know, like this good guy, but he doesn't have a bat signal, so no one can find him.
Okay.
And then Kai just looks at him and says, quote, and I'm not a filthy, rich, spoiled fuck who looks down on everyone. That's his opening shot into the interview. Then he does a hang 10 and starts beatboxing and just wandering around.
I knew he was had some rapper in him. I knew he had that. Hilarious.
So Kai is actually Caleb Lawrence McGilvery from Western Canada. At the time, he was 24. And in this interview, you know, they get to know him. He talked a little bit about his childhood. He said he was a latchkey kid. He grew up as a little kid in the quote unquote ghettos with no family. He said he was raised by the TV and then he ran away at the age of 14. So the interview actually gets pretty dark and they didn't air any of the darker stories. But we did see some of that footage. So he talked about like being locked in a cage for years as a child. Being sexually abused at home and then assaulted when he was a homeless teen. And Jessup did say that Kai explained that that's why he gives fake names and fake information to just protect himself.
Yeah. So sorry. So this interview is aired in some truncated version.
Yes.
And then later in 2013, this documentary comes along and shows all of it.
2023. I think it came out this year in
January. Oh, it's a brand. Oh, yeah. This happened in 2013, and then the documentary just came out.
The documentary just came out. Oh,
okay, okay. I got you.
Yeah, it did show in like a truncated. I was able to find it, yeah. So I could watch. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
And then they also air parts of it in the documentary that weren't aired in this like human interest piece, right?
I think I also want to say there is something about this guy that I and you, meaning the two of us personally, know probably three dozen kids that we cross paths with in the Seattle public schools that easily could have turned
guy.
Into Kai by
know,
the time they were 24. Like easily.
It's kind of wild.
I like know him.
Yeah. I feel like even though he's not from the West Coast, there's something about it that feels like so West Coast to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, Kai said in this interview, he spoke three languages. He starts speaking in French. He says he managed to study at a university for a year, and he talked about how the metal in the earth is like a giant car battery. So there's a long piece about that.
Okay. See, that's kind of like busy bone.
Right. And then he also is like, you know, the best thing about me is that I'm the dad I always wanted to be to myself. Okay. So that was cool.
Yep.
Jessup and his crew couldn't really tell if everything Kai said about his life was true because there was just so much stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
But they said in the documentary that if it was even half true, Kai's story was just awful.
Sure.
With everything that he told them. I couldn't really find an answer to this question of what his life was really like.
Mm-hmm.
Kai posted on Facebook about being abused as a little kid and being locked in a room for 20 hours at a time.
Damn.
But he did have a family in Canada who was at least supportive of Kai in the press. So as soon as Kai started going viral, mm-hmm. his parents were definitely out there. And, you know, it was verified that he had even been in contact with his mother as late as 2012. Mm-hmm. So the year before he had been talking to his mom.
Right.
We know that Kai's parents divorced when he was 4 years old and they both remarried. His dad lost custody of him when he was 8 years old. And both his parents say that Kai had behavioral problems at a young age and had to be institutionalized for behavior issues mm-hmm. several times. Mm-hmm. He never got any official diagnosis. His dad said ADHD. His mom said nothing. According to Kai, he was sexually abused at his mother's house and kept locked in his room. According to his mother, there was no abuse, and he was locked in his room at night when he was fairly little because he kept getting out and like getting into dangerous stuff and hurting himself. So she kept him locked for a while, but she said she never randomly locked him into the room, and she stopped doing it when he was just old enough to take care of himself and she was still sleeping.
Yeah.
According to his cousin said Kai's mom used to put blankets on all the windows and lock them into Kai's room for an early bedtime when he spent the night over there instead of letting them play outside with the other kids. So he was like, it would be light outside, summertime, and we'd be stuck inside. And there was some like talk of like the family maybe being fundamentalist Christian or like very religious.
Okay. He did seem to have a beef with Jesus, if I remember correctly. From
well,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit. He said, if you're going to call yourself Jesus, then I'm glad to be the Antichrist. And then
yeah,
he made
right.
another kind of like hacking motion / like, if you're Jesus, then here comes my Antichrist axe.
Right, right, right. So, you know, we don't know where the truth lies there. Kai's dad said he lost track of Kai after he lost custody and that he didn't know about the abuse at Kai's mother's house. But, you know, in the press, his dad is like, I'm not saying it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But he believed Kai was sexually abused at the facilities where he was institutionalized. And I think he went into a state home.
Mm-hmm.
And then his dad says when Kai aged out of a group home and became homeless at 18, Kai just went into this downward spiral. And actually, according to Mark Blackburn for APTN National News, Kai's dad, Gil McGilvery, had his own experiences in state custody as a child. Kai's First Nations father is from the Cree tribe, and he survived the Canadian residential schools from the 1960s that are kind
wow.
of all over the news right now.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, horrible abuse to children.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And like destroying cultures and the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
So all in all, it's hard to find any concrete information. Kai's cousin said that Kai was known to have violent rages and that his mom kicked him out of the house after he tried to burn it down, but I couldn't find any official record of any of that. So back to the interview. Throughout the course of the interview, they find that, you know, all this stuff about Kai, and then also Kai has been making this big splash in Stockton. What he's been spending his days doing is going into grocery stores and different stores and just doing massive walkouts, which I don't know. I don't think we can get in trouble for it now. We used to do that when we were teenagers.
Like, you just load up a cart full of groceries
and just walk out. And nobody says anything. They just think you're fine. So,
but he was doing that and making a name for himself. Sorry,
he was just
saying?
Doing that and then going to homeless encampments and giving everything away. So he's just literally going to grocery stores, filling grocery stores like carts up, leaving, and then just like handing it out to people. So he had this rep in Stockton.
Yeah, Robin Hood, our hero.
Yeah. So they've finishing up the interview. Kai takes him to a music shop to shoot some B-roll, and he picks up a guitar. And surprise, he's got an original song to play for the cameras.
Good.
And
yes,
it's like an actual radio hit, like a little West Coast indie hit, just like the band Saves the Day or something like that.
Okay, a little emo sort of
like
vibes.
Just fast guitar playing, acoustic, and this like, you know, young voice.
Uh-huh.
He's a hell of a good singer. And he like stares into the camera and he's super sexy all performing it. Like, oh my God, he's beautiful. And like at one point he acts out the song. So he's playing and he pauses and rips off his bandana and his hair like cascades down.
Oh my God.
And afterwards they're just like, what? And they follow him outside. It's the middle of the day.
Yeah.
He gets a 6-pack of Guinness, cracks some beers. They're just hanging in the parking lot.
And dude, he just sounds like, I mean, in Seattle, up in the university district, I guess it's a derogatory term, but they were just known as Avrats. It was like the homeless youth that lived in the university district up there. And he just sounds like the final boss of the Avrats.
It's like, it's so crazy how much it reminds me of Seattle, like the vibe of everything. Yeah. It's really interesting. And just to, not to put find a point on it, he's a star. Like the whole time he's drinking Guinnesses and like sitting in this parking lot, kind of like doing B-roll and shooting this shit. People are just coming up to him being like, are you the guy? Smash, smash. What's up, man? Where are you going? Like just trying to get into it. He has that energy that is really interesting to me. Like, I don't, maybe it's growing up in Seattle in the neighborhood I grew up in or whatever, but like I have the anti-energy for that, where like if anybody is like really coming up with like a crazy energy that's like join me to a fault. Like I wish I was more open, but to a fault, I always see that as a red flag.
Sure.
And this guy is like the Pied Piper of red flags. Like anyone who's like the kind of friend you have that you're hanging out and a weirdo comes up and starts talking to you and you're like, oh my God. And they immediately start a conversation. Invite them over. Yeah,
now they're in our life tonight.
Right. So like he is the Pied Piper of all of those friends.
So he is Master Splinter.
He's
the king of the Avrats.
Okay.
That's all right.
After they finished filming, Jessup took Kai out to lunch to now really try to impress on him all the people looking to make him a millionaire. Jimmy Kimmel wants him. The Kardashian people wants him. And as they're trying to explain to him how actually world famous he is on this enormous scale, Kai is just spinning this little pencil that he had pulled out of a comment card box at the restaurant and just totally distracted. Like he's not paying attention. He's just spinning this pencil. And at the end of this sort of pitch, I guess, for this guy's life, Kai flips the pencil up like he's flipping a coin. It lands in some indecipherable way. And then Kai just looks at him and he tells Jessup, hey man, looks like I just want to go to the Bay Area and smoke some weed. He's not going to meet with anyone. He's like, no, I don't care. I don't want to talk to anybody.
It's like Two-Face. You know, he flips the coin. And if it's heads, he kills you. Tails, you don't die or whatever.
Yeah,
he's just
right.
Like, just somehow that landed. He's like, that looks like it's pointing to a big fat joint in the Golden State Bridge.
That's basically how it played out, right? Yeah. And you know, Jessup is like emailing and texting with like the producers, and the Kardashian people get that notice, right? Uh-huh. And they go, they just countered by saying like, I will send you an actual limousine filled with weed. And Kai hears this and he's like, whatever, man, I don't care. Fine. So he decides like not to go to the Bay Area, kind of hang out in the area.
Okay.
Well, he's still kind of drifts around.
Yeah, right.
Lisa Samsky was a big time reality TV brand manager who worked on Keeping Up with the Kardashians for years. And in 2013, she was looking for new talent for this company. And Kai, she saw the video. She's like, this is my golden goose. Lisa Samsky wanted to pitch Kai. This is so insulting. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She wanted to pitch Kai as the lead in a new reality show showing homeless people happy to be living on the streets. Yeah, I mean, in California, it's way, I can't, it's wild to me that people are like, yes, green light.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I just, as a person who knows these kind of kids, you know, like intimately, this is not a diss. This is not like a bad thing. I'm not, this isn't against them. This isn't derogatory, but like, you don't want to make a reality show with them. Like, they'll steal your cameras.
So we're going to,
like, like this lady will end up this, like, robbed.
This story is for you.
Thank you.
And yes, whatever you're feeling right now, embrace it, because it will continue on.
Yes.
So Kai didn't have any ID, any form of ID at all. So he couldn't take a plane to LA or anything like that. He couldn't, I don't even think he could take a Greyhound bus. So the only thing they could do was drive up and pick him up. So Lisa Samsky herself decided to put together a crew and drive up to get Kai from Santa Rosa, California. Mm-hmm. He had drifted a little bit. So they drive up, they get to Santa Rosa, they find Kai, and he's like absolutely pickled, like drunk, yeah, reeking of booze. They really are like, that's, okay, that's a lot more than what I thought.
Expect?
They, I'm saying, yeah, like, no, they the don't plan know. They're just rich not good.
Idiots, yeah.
They have a contract that they've drawn up for this reality show they want him to star in, and they load him into the back of this swanky white SUV, and they're like, sign this contract immediately, just as they're driving. And Kai takes the contract and he spends 10 minutes signing it. And then when they look at the contract, they realize he signed it in gibberish Egyptian hieroglyphics. And they're like, well, okay.
One of his many languages.
Yes. So they're like,
gibberish glyphics.
They're like,
hieroglyphics. Sorry.
It's kind of like, I mean, in a way, you're like, well, that'll probably work. And then if it doesn't work, then we don't have to honor this contract.
He will have stolen the cameras by then anyways.
Okay, so this happens, but still they're all buzzing. This is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Lisa, Kai, and the crew go on this road trip. Lisa's pumped. Others in the crew are extremely doubtful that this is going to work out. So there's already a little bit of tension. Mm-hmm. It's a little odd. You know, we don't know exactly what happened in that car, but it wasn't like the most amazing thing. Then they get to LA and they've booked Kai a room at the Roosevelt Hotel on Hollywood Boulevard. So super swanky, beautiful, historic hotel. Lisa drops Kai off with the Jimmy Kimmel human interest researcher, Brad Mulcahy. And this guy is in charge of scouting all of the human interest people that they invite on to Jimmy Kimmel.
Sure. That hotel is also right by where Jimmy Kimmel films.
Right.
It's like right down the street.
Yeah.
And also
packed. It's on the Walk of Stars.
Yeah. It's on the Walk of Stars, which is full of lots of Kais. You know, like, there's a wild element.
It's
guaranteed.
So wild.
It's very,
it's hilarious
wild.
When you, we've lived here for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's so funny being on Hollywood Boulevard because there's so many tourists and it is like literally kind of dangerous, and it's just like, it smells like urine, and there are like, it's packed with people, and you're just gonna get maybe punched or like yanked. Yeah. Like, I had a friend who got punched like so randomly. My friend Joy got punched just by a random person who was mad at somebody else. It's just very...
I mean, that opening story about the guy slamming his car into a thing and someone coming out and hatcheting, that could have easily happened on Hollywood Boulevard. Easily.
So Lisa drops Kai off with the Jimmy Kimmel guy. And by now, Lisa has learned enough about Kai to tell this guy, Brad Mulcahy, to watch Kai like a hawk, right? So she drives off to go valet the car. And Brad is like, oh, whatever. He's an adult. And he's just kind of there vibing, I guess just vibing on the street. I didn't really get that. And Hollywood, like we said, is crowded. And people keep coming up to Kai asking for autographs. Everybody knows him. Mm-hmm. People are driving down, honking the horn, screaming smash, smash, smash out the window. Like, it's like this huge phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And then Brad turns around to find Kai in the middle of the day, surrounded by people, pants pulled down and peeing all over Julio Iglesias' star right in front of the Roosevelt's front doors. So that's stressful. And I think Lisa said in this documentary, like, are you kidding me? Like, I just watched him for an entire road trip. You couldn't just stop him from peeing on the star.
You're never going to stop him from peeing on the stars.
That's what they're going to learn.
Yeah.
So Lisa and Brad, they wrangle Kai up to the room. Kai goes straight to the mini bar, which, of course, is stocked with full-size bottles of liquor. He cracks open a bottle of Jack Daniels and literally just takes it in front of these producers and just starts chugging the bottle of Jack Daniels. And at this point, the producers are starting to think this might have not, like, it's maybe not going the way they thought it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And at least Lisa Samsky is having doubts. The Jimmy Kimmel guy, who did not go on the road trip, is still fully on board about getting, you know, Kai on national television on a stage face to face with Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Lisa and Brad, they try to take Kai up for a meal. Maybe that'll stop the insanity, just get him full. It's Saturday night. The Roosevelt lobby is packed. They go downstairs, and Kai starts drunkenly skateboarding, like, all around the lobby. And the Roosevelt security just come over, and they kick the whole entourage out of the hotel, producers and all. They say, you can't stay here anymore.
That was insane.
They didn't even see the pee thing.
Yeah.
Lisa and Brad are determined to get some food in Kai's stomach. So they go outside to find a restaurant, and Kai pulls out a giant knife.
Of course.
And he takes off like a bat out of hell down the street, running ahead of them, throwing the knife ahead of him, trying to stick it into the sidewalk as he's running. So he's just running through the crowd.
In the concrete sidewalk.
Trying to throw it into the Walk of Stars.
You know, I shouldn't laugh. He's obviously having like a complete mental, you know, breakdown. But so it's weird.
It's not, though. Here's the thing about it is that, like, from what it seems like to me, and maybe it is like, he's actually pretty nice. Seems like he's pretty nice to people generally. But when he's in situations where he's supposed to be a certain way, he just acts way more terrible. Like, I think that it's like, this fun.
You think it's performative?
I feel like it's performative in the sense that, like,
I'm gonna go ahead and say it's not performative. I know you watched the documentary and I didn't, but I saw that video. I don't think
it's like there's an element of,
I mean, he knows
I
how
I want to say this, like, okay, personally, like my dad is like this, where you can be chill and then you walk into a restaurant and then he just acts out right immediately. Like, if you're in a position where, like, all of a sudden, you know, there's a certain expectation of behavior.
Yeah, you're going to start.
He's going to do
skateboarding around and, like, throwing knives into the concrete.
Yeah, right. He's going to do something that you're just like, why is this happening? I'm not going out with you in public again. Mm-hmm. And there's something about it that I recognize in Kai's behavior a little bit of, like, I'm holding court and this is going to go the way that I say it's going to be because I resent the fact that anyone thinks I should be anything other than myself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, educated and I don't know the right words, but the word mania comes to mind.
Okay. Okay. Fine.
You know, we're like gonna, something is happening.
You don't need to. Okay. 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 Yeah. So they're watching him run down the street throwing this knife. And Lisa Samsky is finally like, well, this is going a bit sideways, isn't it? She had seen reality stars do nutty stuff, but Kai was coming off as maybe dangerous, yeah. Right?
You think so?
Well, at least it was having second thoughts about Kai as a carefree hippie ambassador to the joys of homelessness. Mm-hmm. She still let him spend the night at her house that night because he didn't have a hotel room with her alone. And she said as soon as she did it, she was like, oh my God, am I going to die tonight?
Yeah.
But Kai was actually pretty polite. They had a mild evening. He was maybe tuckered out from taking Hollywood by the balls, and the evening went by without any incident.
Good, good.
By the way, all of this happened over the span of 10 days. So we're just 10 days out from his first...
From the hatchet attack?
Yeah.
Like, whose hatchet was it? We never got to the bottom of that.
It's his hatchet. He just had it? And then the police took it, I think. So the day after, Kai spent the night at a mansion built with Kardashian money. He was on his way to Jimmy Kimmel. Lisa Samsky was going cold on the carefree homeless youth pitch, but Jimmy Kimmel's people were thirsty for Kai. Lisa Samsky dropped Kai over at the Kimmel Studios and left him there, probably to go decompress after this madcap weekend. And Kai was now in Brad Mulcahy's custody. And the first thing he did was walk up to the Jimmy Kimmel sign outside the talent entrance, drop his pants, and pee all over the sign in broad daylight. After getting yelled at by a security guard, Kai went inside to meet Jimmy Kimmel in person. They took a photo together. Jimmy Kimmel gave him $500 in cash. And Kai went outside and gave the cash to the security guard as an I'm sorry gift for peeing on the sign.
Well, that's a stand-up guy kind of thing to
do. He kind of gives away all his stuff. Like when they were doing their road trip from Santa Rosa, they were like stopped and he was just drunk and he just walked up to another guy and was like, here's my backpack. And he gave him all of his belongings.
Yeah.
Now at this point, Lisa's team is like sure that the Kimmel team is gonna realize like Kai is unstable and pull the plug on his appearance. Like she was just like, we're backing up, man. And they were positive, you know, this is gonna fall apart, but they were wrong. Kai was totally still slated to do a spot on Kimmel. In fact, they even built a fake car for a cute hitchhiking bit to do with Kai. So Kai is shuttled to the green room. And then 90 minutes before he's supposed to take the stage, the Fresno County Sheriff's Office shows up to detain him. So, of course, Kai is a key witness in Jet McBride's attempted murder trial, and no one had been able to find him to serve him a subpoena, right? But guess what? They heard he was going to be on Jimmy Kimmel. So they went down to L.A. and got the LAPD to help track Kai down and, like, get them into this green room.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is all just layering on the stress, making Kai look like a god of chaos. Like the Kimmel team already had no idea if he could even do an interview. Uh-huh. And now he might miss the interview altogether.
Yes.
But Kai was escorted back to Kimmel just before showtime. And it was time to rock. Okay. So they had this little prop car they built for the interview set up in front of a green screen backdrop of like a roadway at night. Mm-hmm. And the bit was Kimmel would be driving along and decide to pick up a very special hitchhiker. So lights, camera, action. Kai comes out and jumps on top of the prop car and almost breaks it. Right? So it's like cracking. You hear cracking on mic and it's swaying back and forth. And Kimmel's inside the car. Yeah. So he's sort of like holding the car roof and being like, hey man, I don't know if this is built to hold human weight. And he's like, why don't you come inside the car instead? So Kai sort of was like, whatever, man. Like he ruined his bit, right? And he kind of like swings over and gets in the passenger seat. And I think you'll recognize this. This is something I recognize as being an improv teacher, doing improv for a long time. It's like sometimes you'll get somebody who's like, I am here to be a comedian, yes, right? So he gets the bug. He wants to be funny.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of the time when people get that bug, they just are insane and like unwatchable. And
yeah, it's
laughing.
Exhausting.
It's
really
exhausting, especially in that scenario.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to really take this thing by storm. And it's usually It's just a funny, weird thing that never works out. I don't know why. Maybe we're all judgmental. All right. So instead of answering any questions, listening to Kimmel, talking to Kimmel, he's just doing these bits. And the bits are like from outer space.
Okay.
Cool. You know, he's just dropping F-bombs. He's not making any sense. I'm going to try to give you some examples to see if you can get a flavor for this. So Kimmel says something like, okay, he says you call yourself home free, not homeless, right? Uh-huh. So you don't want a home, correct? And Kai looks him in the face and he just goes, I am home. What the hell are you talking about? And Kimmel just stares at him, dead silence from the audience. But he's like, he thinks it's a bit. And then he like tries to like wink and like do some like weird things, right? And then, you know, later Jimmy tries to say, you know, you're a hero for attacking that guy with a hatchet. And Kai responds, well, there's not so much difference between him and who they sell as Jesus anyway, is there? Silence. And after these like weird sort of like quips or whatever, he just starts ranting about like how, you know, fat, rich, white guys are the worst. And then Kimmel is like, well, that's me for sure. Like they're doing this thing. And it just goes on like that until Jimmy Kimmel gives him a surfboard and Kai's like, whoa. And then he just wanders around the stage dancing until they cut to commercial. And like in this thing, it's true. Like they say this in the documentary, but you can really see it. Like Jimmy Kimmel is like this pretty brilliant interviewer. I don't ever watch that show, but you can see him pivot. And you know, with this guy as the anchor, with Jimmy Kimmel doing that, Kai kind of sparkled or something. I think he came off as totally unhinged.
Yeah.
But people really watched that and went absolutely wild for him.
He's just like failing up. He's like the god of chaos. And it's like, you know, stumbling towards the mountain peak or something.
Yeah, yeah. His appearance was so popular that Kimmel's people had him back again on the show the next day. And that's where things kind of fell apart.
Oh, just like in BoJack Horseman, when he does the one really good interview. He's like, let's do that again. And everyone's like, no, why? Like, just quit while you're in.
Yeah, that's totally, it's totally that. So
he just like goes and starts, the guy's just like, oh yeah, I've murdered a lot of people. All of them were innocent.
Well, and the thing is that it's not Kai, right? Kai is just being Kai. It's literally the show. The show is doing that. They're like, wow, that was it. Let's do it again.
Yeah, of course, of course.
And they decide to give Kai his own segment. It's called Kai's Corner Movie Reviews. And so they bring him in and they sit him down and they're like, all right, dude, you're going to watch Zero Dark Thirty. And review it. And it turns out Kai cannot follow, like he can't do anything. He can't follow directions. Sure. Like they're starting to see this is not a guy you could go, all right, Kai, meet us at the coffee shop at 6 o'clock. We're going to shoot the scene where you talk to this guy. Like he's not, there's no world in which he's going to follow a direction.
Yeah.
And so they're watching this. They're like, oh no. And then he won't watch the movie, no dice. And then they just are like, okay, well, can we get you to watch the trailer? It's like, absolutely not. Could not watch the trailer. He would just like get up, walk around, not going to focus on the trailer.
Finding little pencils to twirl around.
Right. So in the end, he had no idea. He had no idea what the movie was about. And he just starts rambling, like leaning into the seat and rambling about chemtrails, Osama bin Laden, and fluoride in the water, making people zombies.
Okay.
And Brad Mulcahy is sitting there going, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
This guy definitely can't have a TV show.
Yeah.
And that concluded Kai's career in Hollywood. Lisa Samsky took her limo full of weed back. He'd signed the contract with Hieroglyphics, so no harm, no foul. Jimmy Kimmel's team was like, all right, well, we'll drive you anywhere you want to go. And he was like, cool. He wants to go back up north. So they drove him back and dropped him off where they got him. 3 weeks after the hatchet attack that made Kai famous, he had to testify at Jet McBride's pretrial hearing in Fresno.
Oh, no.
So fresh off his rock star status, Kai came in hot, right? He walks in. He's got both of his hands held up. trying to swear himself in. So he's asking his own swearing questions before the judge was like, no, stopped him in his tracks. And his testimony was as expected. It was, he basically recapped what he said. The only thing he added was that actually we had been smoking a lot of weed at the recycling center before the crash. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Jet McBride's testimony was really illuminating. Here I combined information from the preliminary hearing and then also McBride's testimony from his trial in 2014 mm-hmm. with reporting from Carmen George for the Fresno Bee. So we're just going to put his whole story together. So McBride took the stand and he was like, okay, here's the deal. He had spent the holidays that year drinking scotch and tracking conspiracy theories online. And after he did that, he concluded that he was Jesus Christ.
Okay.
So he lived in Tacoma, Washington, like holler, right?
Yeah.
So he just decided he was going to start driving south from Tacoma, Washington, with a plan to drive to New Orleans and warn everyone of an impending terrorist attack at the Super Bowl. So he's got a thing going on right now. And he, before he takes off, he breaks his cell phone so the FBI couldn't track him. He said he was afraid of being stalked for writing really bad things about Hillary Clinton on the internet, like a lot of people were doing in 2013.
Okay.
McBride said that he met Kai at a motel in Bakersfield, and then from there he called his wife for the first time in a while to find out he had actually left her stranded at the airport back in Seattle. She's like, what's going on? So McBride started having some sort of self-doubt about the whole New Orleans plans thing, and he decided to turn around and drive north back home. Kai was going that way too, so McBride gave him a lift to Fresno. And on the way to Fresno, McBride said that he and Kai just really started getting super hyped up together on the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about like the Illuminati and numerology and something McBride called the 10 ruling families of the world. They're pumping each other up. They get to Fresno and they're still having a grand old time. So McBride had Kai buy some weed, which he called a bag of swag. Never heard that before. They smoked some weed and McBride said, actually, Kai was the one who started getting really dark and paranoid. In fact, McBride said that Kai got so angry that he started being afraid. He was afraid to be in the same car with Kai. And after that, McBride was like, hey, man, I think it's time to drop you off. I got to keep going. So, like, let's find a spot to drop you off. And while they're driving around Fresno looking for a spot, McBride said that Kai turned around and punched him in the face. Now, at this point, McBride was like, he's having a manic episode. So he starts to black out. And the last thing he remembered was Kai telling him that the PG&E workers that they were seeing were planting a bomb on the side of the road. And he just remembers Kai taking the wheel and jerking the wheel away from him towards the PG&E work truck. And he said after that, the whole thing was like really jumbled. He remembered trying to pull the car off of Rayshon Neely and then just like asking him about Jesus. And McBride said, actually, what he was trying to do in that moment was to lay hands on Rayshon to heal him, not to hurt him.
When he's out there screaming or being all racist and everything.
It's a lot, right? Yeah. From all, like, nobody's going to know.
This is a very, very convenient story.
Right.
From McBride.
Right. It is. And also, it's a convenient story from Kai. They're both like,
yeah.
Nobody knows. They found each other really dovetailed, right?
Yeah, I think we're back to no hitchhiking, please.
So after some psychiatric evaluations, it was found that Jet McBride had bipolar disorder with psychotic features. Mm-hmm. And basically what they realized, he had been in a prolonged state of mania since Christmas. Mm-hmm. His toxicology report from the day of the accident came back with trace amounts of weed in his system, but nothing else. They said there's not a lot of evidence that he was laced or that they were extremely
high. Like LSD or something.
Right. It might have just triggered something for him. Now, Kai wasn't charged with anything based on McBride's testimony. As for McBride, at the time of the trial, he was just a super wonky witness. So even though he was able to like tell these stories, right, he at the time also was like very much saying, just so you guys know, I actually forced Hillary Clinton to resign as Secretary of State.
Okay.
And I also made the Pope resign.
Okay.
I cannot be in the same room with a Russian person.
Uh-huh.
And then he kind of ended the whole testimony with being like, and listen, if none of this would have ever happened, if I had just been smoking my Blue Magoo strain of weed and just not drinking scotch. And he's like, we can all avoid this in the future. I just need to do that. Right. And they're like, okay, well, maybe there's more things.
The
right?
damage is literally done, dude.
McBride was ultimately declared insane at the time mm-hmm. of the February 1st crash. And he was sentenced to 9 years in a mental health facility. And I think he got out just a few years later and he's had a happy life. He's very not in the news.
Okay.
But that's not where our story ends, though, okay? So Kai continued on just as famous as ever. His unofficial reality show was his tour de force on social media. He spent the next 3 months traveling around the U.S., surfing, getting a big-ass face tattoo, and playing music, just living life. And the music gigs were now coming in hot. Justin Bieber's people even floated the idea of the two of them doing a collab. Like Kai vacillated between performing his sweet indie pop songs and then just like drunkenly screaming stream of consciousness rants over reggae beats. So
okay.
It was kind of a mixed bag. Nice. He had kind of a rep in Fresno for just being like the worst person to do a show with.
Uh-huh.
Like after a while he started being banned from all these
yeah,
different
venues.
Yeah, I
mean that makes complete sense. It seems inevitable.
But he was still super famous.
Uh-huh.
Then on May 16th, 2013, about 3 months after skyrocketing to fame on a hatchet, Kai was arrested for beating a 73-year-old man to death
in
New Jersey.
Oh no.
Joseph Galfie's body was found Monday, May 13th, after he didn't show up for work that day. Galfie was an attorney for the city planning board in Greenbrook, New Jersey. He was also known around town for his performances. He had played in a local wedding band for 25 years, and he had lived in Jersey all of his life. Galfie's longtime partner had previously died, so he was living alone in this modest brick home in Clark, New Jersey on Starlight Drive. So police found Galfie face down in the master bedroom in his socks and underwear, and he had been just terribly beaten. It looked as if he had been stomped to death.
Oh, that's R.I.P.
Yeah.
That's ugh.
There are no signs of forced entry, no signs of struggle, but police did find a notepad with a phone number on it and the name Lawrence Kai. So they plugged in Lawrence Kai into Google and they got, first thing, 8 million hits, the viral hatchet hitchhiker video.
Yeah.
Like almost comically, well, okay.
Yeah.
This
right.
guy probably is our suspect. On the same little table, they found a receipt for a one-way train ticket for May 12th, like in a local train station in New Jersey. So police go to the train station. They look through surveillance footage and they find footage of the victim buying a ticket and then handing it to a man with wild curly hair poking out of a bandana, wearing a big duffel bag and like randomly brushing his teeth with a toothbrush. It's Kai. So the men hug, and then Kai boards the train and takes off. So it's enough to bring Kai in, right? Mm-hmm. And they start distributing wanted posters and bulletins, calling Kai armed and dangerous. On May 14th, Kai made this, I'm not going to read it, but it's like a very graphic post on Facebook. And he poses a rhetorical question. And he's like, what would you do if you woke up in a stranger's house and found you had been drugged and raped?
Uh-huh.
And all of these people start responding, you know, smash. And Kai is just responding, I like your idea. So mm-hmm. they're just talking about, you know, exactly what he did with the hatchet.
Mm.
So Kai was arrested on May 16th after he was recognized in a Starbucks in Philadelphia. He had changed his clothes and cut his hair. According to Kai, he ran into Joseph Galfy in Times Square in NYC. So he said he was walking around and Joseph Galfy came up to him and said, "Oh man, you look lost." And Kai responded, "Oh, I'm heading to New Jersey." And Galfy said, "Great, I'll give you a ride." So as they're driving up, you know, he tells Galfy he doesn't have a place to crash. Galfy invites him to sleep at his house. He goes to a local restaurant, buys some Italian food. They come back, they eat it at the house. And Kai said Galfy poured him a beer into a glass and he drank a few of those. And after a while, he got super dizzy. So, you know, he's trying to go to bed. He said that then Galfy asked to take a shower with him and Kai refused. Took a shower, went to bed. And then the next morning he woke up and saw evidence that Galfy had sexually assaulted him while he was sleeping. So Kai said he had decided not to say anything. And Galfy drove him to the station, the train station, bought him a ticket to Ashbury so he could meet up with a fan who had a place for him to crash that night. Mm-hmm. And they take off. So he goes to Ashbury and he says he gets there and he and the girl keep missing each other. They just don't hook up. So when he realizes he doesn't have a place to stay that night, he said he went and called Galfy again and asked to crash at his place for a second night. After dinner, he said they're sitting around and it was the same routine as last time. Galfy poured him beer in a glass. He drank it. He got dizzy. And this time he passed out. And he said he woke up and Galfy was trying to assault him. So Kai said, you know, I was really drugged out, blacked out, started hitting him in self-defense, and he doesn't really remember anything else. After that, he tried calling the fan that he had been in contact with to get a ride out of New Jersey. And, you know, that didn't fall. It was all kind of crazy, but he eventually made his way to Philadelphia where he was arrested. So he said he cut his hair because he was planning to go to Georgia and it was quote unquote really hot there. And then he cut his jeans into shorts because he wanted to exercise. So the investigation showed different things, like mm-hmm. a different story than Kai told.
Okay.
There was nothing to indicate self-defense. So Kai didn't have any injuries at all. There was no, you know, mm-hmm. evidence of any kind of assault and also like no sort of defense wounds or anything like sure. that. In fact, what they find is that 73-year-old Galfy was actually fairly frail. He wasn't like a very strong or big guy. Mm-hmm. Joseph Galfy, on the other hand, was brutally beaten. He had a broken neck, broken eye sockets, a broken nose, and like a torn ear. It was all consistent with head stomping. Kai also, they find out, has this history of posting articles about vigilante killings against pedophiles on social media. And when he was arrested, they found printouts of like the names and addresses of local sex offenders. Now, Galfy was not a sex offender, mm-hmm. but like those things yeah. combined look like he was kind of on some sort of mission, right?
Yes.
And then also they start looking at the hatchet attack, you know, which shows a history of preference for vigilante justice, right? Uh-huh. Like they're starting to connect these types of crimes.
Is there any, did they find any drugs or roofie
no.
things? No. Yeah. All right.
In the initial police interview, Kai comes in and this is just me, but he really seems like totally shocked that he's in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like he sits down with police and they start talking and they start talking about the charges. And it's like halfway through the interview when he realizes he needs a lawyer because he didn't think he was going to be charged with anything. Mm-hmm. He thought that they were just, you know, he's like, "Are you kidding me? I'm a hero. I took yeah. this guy off the street," basically. Yeah.
Because he's admitting that he did it out of cell. He's like, "Yeah, I did it."
He says he wasn't trying to kill him and he doesn't remember.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
but he did attack him because mm-hmm. he was doing it in self-defense. And, you know, when they start telling him, you know, "You're in really big trouble," he really did seem like, "Oh, this is going to be just like the hatchet attack. They let me go," mm-hmm. you know. So in the end, all the awful injuries sustained by Joseph Galfy were enough to show that Kai went far beyond self-defense, any definition of self-defense in the attack. It was yeah. just like an overkill sort of situation. And that, combined with him changing his clothes and hair, getting rid of his phone, and then running and hiding from police, not reporting the assaults, you know, all that kind of stuff, was enough to land a conviction. So as of today, Kai is serving a 57-year prison term for murder in Trenton, New Jersey. All appeals so far have been rejected. And to this day, Kai calls the trial a sham. According to the Fresno Bee, Kai filed a lawsuit against Netflix this spring in response to the documentary he said was, quote, ruthlessly exploiting a hero's life story for money.
Man, so he really, he's riding this I'm a hero gravy train.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, when you start looking at the videos that are, like, insane, they're very, it's, he's literally saying he thought he hatcheted that guy to death.
No, I know.
I would have killed him.
Yes.
At the recycling center. I also might have killed this other guy in an orchard.
I mean, the craziest thing is that people would see that and say, like, oh, we can monetize it. I understand him being a weird viral sensation and people are like, it's Kai, the hatchet dude. What's up, bro? But to think like this guy is some sort of legitimate subject for me to try to contain, it just is like the most naive thing I've ever heard.
It's wild to me. I just don't know. I'm like, do people just... It does seem like that. That's the weirdest part about it, is it's so naive. You know, the other thing I'm just going to say that's just really trippy to me is just, we hear the phrase viral video all the time.
Yeah.
And we watch them.
Yeah.
And they just feel so accessible and whatever. But I don't know if I've ever really sat down and thought 8 million people, probably 3 times that many, 5 times that many, have sat down and watched, like, if it was one person,
yeah,
who's like, not only have they watched me, but I am evocative to them. Like, yeah. They connect with me. Like, the weight of that is so insane. Like, the idea.
Yeah, we just add on to whatever kind of, you know, grandiose delusions he had.
I mean, absolutely. And yeah, it's like something that is so modern. Like, our brains have no idea how to handle that. We don't have the evolutionary, like, you know, strength, the evolutionary experience
to be seen by 8 million people.
No, there's no way. There's no pocket of our brain that can really understand, like, the weight of that and what that means. And if 8 million people tell you you're a hero, you're charismatic, I mean, the idea of, like, how many talented people I know that would never do a video and producers are, like, breaking down their door. You know what I mean? Yeah. People who have worked their whole lives to be good could do their best work. And nobody's going to be like, we've got to find his email address. You know, like, it's just like, that does not happen for, like, people who actually create things,
like,
right?
Like you and I.
Right. Or, like, I mean, even people that, you know, like you and I, but even just people who do amazing, like, there's TV shows that disappear. I'm like, this person's brilliant.
Yeah, right.
And it just never happens again. And this is like, so I guess I'm just saying, like, with Kai, it's not that he made something. He is something.
Yeah.
You know? And that has got to be, for anyone, just the craziest thing. Like, you either have to not think about it and sort of shut a piece of you off.
Yeah.
And if you embrace it, like, you're one of those guys who's like, I'm the weirdo who's going to be like, hey, can I join your friend group? And we're all like, we're open, just like open to any experience. Those kind of people, you're like, ah, get away from me. Red flag. He's doing that to the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, man, come to my table. Like, no holds barred. You seem pretty wild. Let's talk about the Illuminati. I mean, thank God we never got famous. I'd be out there, man, on a rocket ship. Nobody can bring me back. I'm nervous just thinking about it. I was like,
I hope no one listens to our podcast.
Oh my God.
Muriel's Murders is entirely created by the two of us, Muriel Montgomery and Nick Castellini, right here in our Los Angeles apartment.
If you enjoy the show, we would love your support.
A $5 monthly subscription at patreon.com/Muriel's Murders or through our Spotify feed is the very best way to help this podcast. Those dollars go directly to us, and we make the show and give it directly to you.
Plus, you unlock 2 exclusive episodes a month and 1 true, non-true crime episode a month.
Check out murielsmurders.com/support for more great ways to support the show that don't involve money.
All those links are in the show notes of this episode.
We love hearing from you. Our DMs are open, and you can email us.
Our music is by Mario Castellini. Find him on Instagram at Castellini Beats.
And the Good Stuff podcast has had a string of incredible episodes recently. Very proud of them. So if you're in the mood for some uplifting stories from all kinds of interesting people, check out the Good Stuff podcast. Recent guests have included John Wayne Troxell, who bravely battled his PTSD after serving in the military. We got Mama Judy Littlefield, whose son Chad Littlefield was murdered alongside his best friend Chris Kyle, a.k.a. the American Sniper, and she's there to tell the story of her son and her, you know, journey towards healing, really, and just how that's an ongoing thing. She's an amazing woman. And this week we just had an episode with Danny Manning. He's a retired New York City firefighter who was at Ground Zero on 9/11 and survived the collapse of the second tower. All just beautiful people telling their stories. Please find the Good Stuff podcast on whatever you're listening to my voice on now.
We love you.
You guys do what you know, Kai said. If he had just said the thing from the beginning, you know, and just stuck to that, which is what? Don't let people judge you.
Yeah, this is beautiful.
Doesn't matter what you look like or who you are or if you've messed up, you deserve respect.
Yeah, and love.
And love.
I know, I got you with that one. Okay,
okay.
We're done.
Okay, bye.